All right, I've got Darren here from Supergiant Games, the award-winning composer of Bastion and the new hit game Transistor. I've been listening to the soundtrack for a couple of weeks now, and it is awesome. So, Darren, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Not a problem.
So, first of all, before we dive into the video game music, congrats on your band's single that you just released. It was last week, correct?
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. We made a video for it and everything. And
yeah, I saw the video you posted on Twitter, and cool. That was kind of it's hard to get into songs when people post them on social media for me, but
yeah.
You looked like you were having such a good time in the video
yeah.
that it just pulled me right in. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's great track, and I'll link to it in the show notes so that people can check out your band if they'd like.
Great, thank you so much.
So Transistor, it's been a pretty big hit so far, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're really happy with how everything's going. People seem to be responding really well. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's all we can hope for, pretty much.
Cool. Now, I've heard you kind of talk about Transistor a little bit in other places on the internet, but for people who maybe haven't heard before, how would you kind of describe the soundtrack for Transistor?
Yeah, Transistor is a term I use to talk about it. So, you know, for myself to try to pick a center for the music would be like old world electric. It's sort of like a, you know, it's not that tidy of a package, but it's a descriptor nonetheless. Yeah, it's certainly, if you're familiar with the soundtrack for Bastion, it's certainly darker and a little bit colder feeling, a lot more electronic textures, still eclectic, but in a pretty different way, I think.
Yeah, I read an article that you posted as well that was about how you kind of chose the instruments for the sort of the sound palette of mm-hmm. the game. What's what's your process for actually doing that? Do you just sit down and just sort of noodle at the computer for a while and just sort of experiment, or did you have a lot of information for the game to go on before you started trying to do that?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, we all sit down and talk about our ideas for the game, you know, really early on. And one of the first things that happens in our process is, you know, we talk about that and everybody's unleashed on their various disciplines. You know, Jen is concepting art and I'll go off and start concepting music stuff. And for this project, it took a lot of experimentation. I had a lot of ideas about the direction I wanted to go and sort of ended up, with the palette that I sort of described to you before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it took a lot of experimentation for sure. And a lot of it really is just kind of sitting down and noodling, and seeing what fits and, you know, that's guided by ideas that I have about it. You know, I want to try and do something sort of loungy, you know, and have some sort of jazz influence in this, in some way. It was one of the thoughts I had. You know, one of the early kind of descriptors that we were playing around with was we wanted it to maybe feel operatic, the game somehow, whether it's, and so I explored some of the instruments and elements you might find in more operatic music. But I think that it sort of ended up translating into the old world elements and not, you know, less operatic maybe and more sort of kind of old world European instruments and stuff like that, accordions and harps and mandolins and things like that.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised when I heard the accordion for the first time in there, and or at least sort of realized that I was listening to the accordion.
Yeah,
those very very cool choices.
Awesome, thank you.
Yeah. Now, from a production standpoint, is it difficult to merge some of those more kind of classical instruments like the harp or kind of an old world instrument sort of like the accordion and mesh that with the electronic sort of feel and vibe from the rest of the soundtrack?
I feel like it's a lot easier than you would think it would be,
okay.
if that makes sense.
Oh, hey, like, that's great to hear.
once you try it, you can, I feel like I can sort of tell whether or not I think it works. You know, I can put the two things together and it's like, peanut butter and jelly. Either it's a nice compliment or, it's like peanut butter and anchovies. It's not a nice compliment.
Not as good. Yeah.
Yeah. You could tell. I think.
Cool. How long did you work on the soundtrack for Transistor?
Let's see. I guess we started talking about Transistor sort of at the end of 2011, and we were still working on Bastion and various platforms for Bastion. So sometime towards the end of 2011, I started noodling at least with Transistor. And it was probably, we didn't really start in earnest on it until part of the way through 2012.
Okay. So it's almost a couple of years,
basically. Yeah.
That's a lot of, was that, you know, every single day, 8 hours a day or more? Like, can you give us an idea of kind of how much time you're dedicating on like a weekly basis to producing the music?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, so I'm the audio director and I do all the sound effects and the voiceover recording and everything in addition to composing the music and stuff. So my time is divided between all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's like a full-time kind of thing. but it's not, you know, it's interesting for producing the music, you know, it's really varied depending on the piece, you know, sometimes, and depending on the deadline situation, you know, it's... When we had a long prototyping phase for this project, and during that phase, it was like pretty hard to call pieces done, you know?
Yeah.
Because I would just like noodle around forever, and I could just do that all day until I have to like make something. So, you know, I over the course of several months, you know, ended up producing maybe, I don't know, during our prototyping phase, it's probably about 6 months or something, I ended up making like 7 or 8 pieces of music, which isn't a high volume for sure. You know, certainly towards the end of the project, I produced a bunch in really quick succession that I ended up being happier with some of those than, you know, the ones I spent a long time on. So it really just depends on the momentum and the circumstance, you know, and sort of how much time I have and, and all that stuff.
Sure.
So yeah, there's a lot of factors, I would say.
You hit on something, kind of an interesting idea there that I was going to ask you about later on, but knowing when something is finished in, you know, as a songwriter for a band, for example, it's a little easier, I imagine, to kind of, you know, you've got a more standardized form that people are used to hearing.
Sure.
And with games... you know, form can be kind of all over the place because, you know, not only do you have interactive gameplay now that changes the elements of the music, but even when you don't, you know, form is just kind of out of the window in a little, you know, a little bit because you could do so many different things. There isn't a hard set of rules that people are used to.
Yeah.
So how do you approach form for a specific piece, you know, coming from that sort of, you know, that band mentality?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I kind of approach it with a similar mentality, actually. I generally use kind of standard songwriting structures, you know, whether it's like A, B, A, B, C, B, or whatever, or like an A, B, A, B, A, B, you know, or something like that. Just usually kind of a basic standard song structure for the pieces. And then within each section, I'll try to have changes, you know, further kind of micro changes within each section to keep the piece interesting. But yeah, for the most part, I try to have like 2 or 3 distinct kind of sections of the piece. And that's sort of the guideline I use for most of the pieces in the game, particularly the vocal pieces.
Got it. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was noticing there's so many small, like, not small in stature, but small in, you know, just like very tiny musical ideas that work their way in and out within any specific section, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. How do you keep all of that organized? I mean, I guess you just kind of described it a bit, but when you're kind of coming up with all of those little ideas and sort of figuring out what works and what doesn't, how do you keep all of that straight?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times if I'm working with loops or something, you know, I'll just kind of throw a ton of stuff, you know, in my session and, you know, basically subtract solo things and subtract things until it sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll, you know, I'll further subtract and further subtract And, you know, usually I'll try to make the end of a particular section the biggest version of that section, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll try to have sort of a build within each section. A lot of times that happens if I'm just experimenting with loops, for example, by just removing, like, you know, if I have a 4-bar section, you know, I will have the final bar be everything playing at once. The previous bar is like one fewer thing, and the previous bar is one fewer thing. You know what I mean? That's just like a basic example. But yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of experimentation and just trying to listen for, you know, what's interesting. And a big part of my process too is the actual production and mixing mm-hmm. of the piece. So I feel like if I can get, you know, get it to a place where it's sort of sounding interesting, just from a sonic perspective, that's sort of part of the goal for me too. So that's another sort of guideline that I can use for myself.
Yeah. How much now from the writing of the material to the sound production end of it, mm-hmm. how would you say that you split your time?
It's interesting because you're talking about sound production of the pieces of music.
Exactly. It's like once you've you know, come up with all the musical ideas and now you want to get them to that place where they sound sonically, you know, more complete or more cohesive.
Yeah. I think a lot of it happens at the same time for me. Cause I write by just kind of recording directly into Logic. Mm-hmm. And I'll track all the ideas as I get them and I'll try to make them sound cool as I go. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll do a final mix at the end, but a lot of times I've sort of done a lot of that process kind of as I am adding things to the piece.
Okay.
So sort of by the end, I'll have to do kind of a short mix pass to get everything, you know, panned in an interesting way and sort of automate some stuff and bring stuff up and down. But for the most part, a lot of that's kind of done by the time I get there.
Oh, okay. That's cool. That mm-hmm. makes things a lot easier, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now what's, you know, in terms of composing, you know, since that's a very kind of fluid workflow, is there a specific piece of that process that you really enjoy versus a specific piece of that process that you may really, you know, maybe really difficult for you personally to kind of grapple with when you have to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the production stuff has always been the most fun for me. Mm-hmm. Just getting a cool sound and having an idea about how something should sound and trying to figure out how to get from A to B and make it sound like that. And that's always been fun for me. Some of the most daunting stuff always is just coming up with something from thin air, you know, trying to start a piece is always the hardest part for me, I think. But once I'm started, I feel like I can kind of follow the through line of where it's headed or at least try to subvert it or something. I'll have a direction. But occasionally I'll get hung up and have a thing that I can't really get to work and I'll bash my head against it for a long time. But in that, you know, usually I just try to move on to something else and come back to it. And maybe I won't be so attached to that idea and I'll be, you know, just one slight change will allow me to go in a different direction and all that. To answer your question, I think the production is probably the most fun for me and just the sort of invention of, you know, a new piece is always daunting.
Yeah. I think that that kind of comes across that you it sounds like you do a really good job of compartmentalizing your musical ideas. And I imagine that, you know, probably helps a little bit in kind of grappling with that, laying down of the original material. But, you know, one thing that I was always kind of, one thing I'm kind of curious about is, you know, when you've got like a single idea, mm-hmm. What's sort of your thought process for developing that? And one thing that kind of comes to mind is that really cool descending bass line on like the upright bass that comes out in mm-hmm. Stained Glass.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you have an idea like that, how do you take it from that, oh, it's really cool moment to, you know, kind of putting it into the right context of, you know, all the sonic stuff going on around it?
Yeah, you know, in that specific case, that's a thing where that particular bass line, you're talking about the B section where it's like a walking bass line.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that section actually, I think that might just be a loop from Logic, that walking bass line there. That I've changed the instrument for. It was an upright bass. I changed it to, I think it might partially be an upright bass. I changed it to a distorted kind of electric bass. And then I added a vibraphone, doubling it. So I built on top of it and tried to just put, if I hear a particular thing or come up with a particular thing that I think is really cool, I'll try to, put other stuff there to service it, best I can, right? That's kind of a fairly complicated line. It's like busy for, and I'm not using a ton of like dense jazz chords that can support a bass line like that necessarily. So I try to put in like a lot of percussive elements and things like that. There's like some synth, like tremolo synth stuff happening in the background. That's just very simple in terms of like harmonically very simple, just one or two notes. To try and make room for a complicated bass line that I then also tried to make the melody line by putting a vibraphone on top of it and all that stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. You gotta kind of get out of the way. That bass line, it's when it comes out, it's going places.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think I'm thinking of the right... Yeah, I think that's you were talking about, the walking bass line. Yeah, that's the only...
Absolutely, yeah.
More generally, the question was about building up a section or I'm sorry.
Kind of like taking a musical idea and sort of developing it. So either taking, something like a bass line or even the, the arpeggiated chord that, you first hear in the trailer, like the first sound that you hear, how do you take something as simple as that and really kind of give it the respect and the care that it gets obviously in order to become a soundtrack.
Each piece starts differently for me, and sometimes the tempo and feel is the very first thing I'll establish, and I'll start with a drum part, or in the case of Old Friends, that riff was the first thing I had, but I did have an idea that I wanted it to be kind of like ploddingly slow and kind of really moody. And I found that riff really came about. I was just playing with guitar sounds, and I found this crazy delay sound that I ended up using for that part, and that's what made me, what inspired me to write that part the way I did. Yeah. It was just that particular interesting, really weird kind of reverse delay reverb sound on the guitar. And so once I had that, the feel of the piece was sort of determined already in terms of what tempo I wanted it to be, just to kind of support the how interesting I thought that sound was. I really wanted to evoke, specifically for that song, exit music for a film, the part in a Radiohead song on OK Computer where it just explodes and there's that really dirty bass, thing. Specifically, that was something I kept in mind when I was making that piece. So I wanted to try and pull from there. That's how that one ended up coming together, I think.
Very cool. Yeah, that just, as soon as that... those first 10, 15 seconds of music happen. The mood is very clear and it carries throughout the entire rest of the album. I haven't played the game yet because I'm waiting for it to come out on Mac, you did a great job nailing that mood.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. It's something that, I was listening to it while I was walking the dog the other night, and it's like dark out. It's like all of a sudden walking the dog is feeling like a much more badass experience, It's like I'm like walking around brooding. It should be raining or something. I don't know. Cool. And then the last couple of questions I really have are, would you say that your primary instrument is the guitar?
Yeah. Now, that was my first one I learned. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, me too. I learned guitar because I got sick of playing air guitar in the mirror. Thought it looked kind of dumb, and so I, you know, figured I'd
get a real one,
a real guitar for a while. Yeah. So same here, and you know, that's. I don't think people always think of the guitar as a compositional instrument, but so I think it's kind of underrated in that respect a lot. But you know, for someone who's kind of making that same transition from, you know, the conventional songwriting to, you know, coming up with these themes and these, you know, more percussive kind of elements for writing game music, what advice would you give to someone, or like what were some of the most challenging parts for you in terms of making that transition yourself?
One thing about the guitar that can be a challenge for writing is that a lot of times, I mean, in a lot of instruments, I think, are this way, whereas you have places that your hand will just sort of want to go from muscle memory and stuff you're comfortable with and stuff that you just sort of like to play because you like how it feels to play it, you know?
Yeah.
And that can be sort of a first instinct of like the first thing you play whenever you pick up a guitar, you know?
Yep.
I play like Say It Ain't So, or you know what I mean? Whatever, you know, just because I like it.
It's fun to play. Yeah.
But it's not, you know, I'm not going to make everything sound like Say It Ain't So, hopefully. you know, so.
That's the next game, right?
Yeah. But you know, I think trying to avoid that is something that can be challenging and is important to do, especially when you're trying to evoke something specific that doesn't have anything to do with Weezer, you know, so some of the things that I do, you know, I'll try, you know, in Bastion, for example, I used alternate tuning for just about all the tracks on there.
Kidding.
Yeah, I used it was basically a dadgad tuning, but down a whole step.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So it was like a CGC, FGC tuning for most of it. And once I found that tuning and started making some pieces with that tuning, I'm like, okay, well, this is just what the sound is, you know? And I was able to sort of lean on that to help establish what the sound of that game was. Cause it forces you to write in a certain mode and it just sort of ties. I felt it tied the feel of everything together. You know, for this game, I was trying to challenge myself to not use my alternate tuning was standard tuning for this game, you know? So I think I used standard tuning for every song on this one, actually. So yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted to try and create some interesting different sounds with the guitar that I could play in standard tuning. You know, and so my goal was really to try to, you know, get out of my comfort zone with the stuff that I generally like to play and you know, make something that sounded interesting and appropriate for the tone that I was going for. Another trick actually is, you know, I have a bunch of instruments that I don't really, that like are, you know, banjo, mandolin, ukulele, that I don't like really play, but I can physically play them because I can play the guitar, right?
Right. Yeah.
So those are really fascinating to write on for me, actually, because I don't know any banjo chords, you know what I mean? Like,
you don't have all those memorized? Come on.
I just don't have the shapes under my fingers, right?
So when
you try and play guitar shape on the banjo, it sounds crazy.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting for writing, I think, and a really cool way to, it's a similar thing to alternate tuning, basically, is you know, put yourself on a different instrument that you can still kind of physically play, and you end up coming up with all sorts of different stuff that you wouldn't normally come up with necessarily. So that's another trick for me.
I remember the first time someone handed me a mandolin. I was only maybe a couple years into knowing how to play the guitar, and I'd never heard of a mandolin. I'd never seen one, and you know, I kind of automatically assumed I would, you know something would translate.
Yeah.
And you know, I went to go form the first chord, and it, you know, it sounded like my nightmares. And I was like, this is a stupid instrument.
Yeah.
You know, 17-year-old me was not having it.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I could see that would be a useful trick, though, to kind of break yourself out of your comfort zone, though. That's awesome.
Yeah. And also trying to do some kind of single note stuff. You can do that on a, you know, on anything. and that's useful for writing melodies and stuff. I mean, you can do that on any, you know, it's easier to be able to play kind of single note patterns that sound halfway decent on instruments you don't play, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the chords take quite a bit of experimentation to figure out stuff that sounds cool. You know, if you're just looking for interesting sounding stuff.
Yeah. So you kind of talked about some of the challenges of composing with a guitar. What do you think is one of like the big strengths that guitar specifically kind of brings to the writing process for game music?
I think depending on what you're going for, guitar is pretty evocative of a lot of different stuff, depending on how you use it.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, I think, is a nice tool, at least in the stuff that I've been doing, for evoking specific types of emotions and vibes. So that's been useful to me for sure. I also think that it's, for, in my case, you know, as someone who records at home and uses kind of part fake, part real instruments, having, whenever I have a guitar, it's a real guitar. So, or a bass or a banjo or mandolins, usually those are all pretty much real, ukulele. It adds, it disguises the fake instruments nicely. when you if you're writing on keys and you have all fake instruments, all software instruments, I feel like sometimes that kind of synthetic sound can make itself apparent.
That's a really, really good point.
Yeah. So using some real instruments in there, I think, is pretty valuable for, you know, making it not sound canned. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff I do to try to make it not sound canned too. I'll put, you know, do all sorts of processing on loops and software instruments to try to make them more interesting, or at least fit the aesthetic of what I'm going for to some degree, rather than just be like a raw, you know, software synth or a raw sample from a library, you know.
Got it. No, that's a very interesting insight. I'm gonna have some fun with that one. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, I mean, this is a trick. I've never done this myself because I don't really write for orchestras or anything like that. But I know that, you know, a lot of people who write for orchestras and do kind of software orchestra stuff, if you have like one violin playing the same line that your violin section is playing, it sounds like way more realistic than if you, you know, for example. So that's another kind of way that you can use real instruments to hide the fakeness of your fake instruments.
Well, that's awesome. That's an awesome trick. It makes a lot of sense, obviously. And now I'm kind of thinking back to all sorts of other things that I've been listening to over the past several weeks. And now I'm going to have to go back and re-listen to kind of see if I can catch when that's happening. But very cool. Now, for you mentioned that kind of the big orchestral soundtracks, and I know that that's not what you do. And I think that a lot of people kind of have that in their mind when they're broaching the subject of, you know, getting into game music for the first time. And, you know, they've been listening to, you know, I don't know, we've gone through like 20 at least Final Fantasy games.
Sure.
You know, and people have heard those over and over and over again. And that is such an overwhelming prospect to think that you need to meet in order to kind of be, you know, quote unquote successful. And I think that, you know, that kind of perpetuates in a few different ways, from like, if I only had the right software, if only I had the right sample library, all those sorts of things. What would you say to kind of that mindset piece in terms of like, what's really helped you, you know, avoid thinking like that, or what advice would you give to someone who's just built the prospect of being successful so high up in their mind that, you know, we need to tear it down a little?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I knew I couldn't execute that convincingly, you know, so the Bastion is the first game I started composing for, and I knew that we didn't have a budget for me to hire people.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even really have a background in preparing like music for other people, really. You know what I mean? That wasn't even what I was best equipped to do. So it just never really, I had a little bit of an ambition not to use too much orchestral stuff, just because I'd heard it a bunch and mm-hmm. wasn't really interested in doing that same thing because I sort of didn't feel like I could do it as well as other people had already done it. I think something valuable to try and do is like lean into your strengths, like lean into what you can execute well fully. If you can fully execute on something, even if it's like something simple and less complicated, that full execution, I think, will really come across in the final product. You know, and that's really important to me. I think as a producer, like my producer ear, is what I think makes me think that's as important as I think it is.
Sure.
But that's, for me, that's sort of part of my composing process, right? Is like, if I can't get a thing to sound good sonically at the end, it's kind of irrelevant what the genius melodic idea I had was, because who cares? Because if the delivery method isn't something that's pleasurable, or is distracting because of its fakeness or is whatever, you know, then I haven't done my job. So, for me, it's really like a lot, it's like half, at least half just the execution, you know, like can I get it presentable?
Cool. Now I think that's really great, you know, kind of advice that, I think that everyone could probably stand, know your strengths and leverage them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that in so many different areas, music, you know, business, marketing, like all, yep. You know your strengths, leverage those strengths.
Yeah, it's a really, really simple idea. I mean, you know, it's a simple idea, but I mean, I guess so it's two parts, right? It's leverage your strengths, and then the other part is whether or not it's one of your strengths, production is an important aspect. You know what I mean? Like, for me, that's something that I like a lot and was one of my strengths, I think. So I leaned on that real hard. Other people may not have that in their pocket, but that's the thing where it's know your strengths and then also maybe do that a little bit too, because that's pretty, I think that's really valuable, is having like a thing, like a good sounding mix. If you yourself can get it from idea to finished good sounding mix, that's really, really valuable.
Awesome. Well, Darren, I'm sure you've got a lot going on, and so I'll let you go. But thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today, and you gave some really valuable insights that could be very helpful to the aspiring musical entrepreneur.
Awesome.
So where can people find you online, and where can they find Transistor, and where can they find your band Single?
Yes, I am at Darren Korb on Twitter, DarrenKorb. On Twitter, my band is called Control Group, at CTRL Group Music on Twitter, and Supergiant Games, you can get Transistor at supergiantgames.com. It's also on PS4 and on Steam, and the soundtrack you can get on Steam or at our website as well. Let's see, what else am I forgetting? Is that it? Is that everything?
Got Transistor, got the band, got the game. Yep. Yeah, I think we're good.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it, and have a good one.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.